If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage. Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the USS Enterprise.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, Deep Space Nine, a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
How you doing, Adam?
Hanging in there.
Shabbat Shalom. We're recording on a Friday.
Oh, to you as well. My mom came to town last weekend, and
oh right,
and she asked me how I was doing, much in the same way you did. And
are you implying that I wasn't being sincere?
No, not at all. That's not the point of this at all. And I just said I was okay, and I have no idea why I said that. And she was like, "Oh, really? Just okay? Okay's fine.
Yeah,
okay's just fine."
Yeah, I think the problem with that question is it gets asked too often, and then people give kind of knee-jerk answers, and then occasionally you get asked a million questions about what means your knee-jerk answer.
I really try to give that some thought every time, and that's probably a mistake on my part, because those who ask that question aren't expecting a sincere answer.
Adam, we were playing a game before we started recording called Marin Chicken, which was, do you have an idea for something to talk about during the open? No, do you? No. Then I realized I did.
It's where we look at each other with guns to each other's heads and ask, so what's your deal?
Yeah. But I realized I had an idea for a tweak on a beloved Marin that we do fairly frequently, the card game that we play known as War. Mm. But we recently came into possession of a whole new trove of cards. We both did.
Yeah.
Because our card daddy, Bill Tilly, sent us huge boxes of cards.
Huge boxes.
What about we play War with Bill Tilly cards?
All right, I'm into that. Like, do we just blindly reach into the box and pull out a set? Is that how we do this?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
The game is five cards. The game is exceedingly simple. Part of this is just the cards, data.
Time to pluck a pigeon.
I found the pack that I'm going to use.
Okay, I am going with the first pack that I took out. I sort of dug for the middle of the box, unwrapped a newspaper-wrapped plastic, sort of. We should describe this for the viewer. Like, if you were to collect baseball cards, you would often encounter like a plastic baseball card holder, one that can hold like hundreds of cards. Even that's what we have. We have a cardboard box full of these card holders, and we've each reached in for a random.
Let's do the flip. You ready for this, Adam?
I am.
3, 2, 1. Adam, the box that I picked is from an episode of The Greatest Discovery, off-season episode where we reviewed a TOS episode called Mud's Women, episode title, Legendarily Horny. And the card I flipped over is card number 24. Confidence is sexy, a great message told in the most misogynistic way. And it shows it's two frames, one of Mudd's women sitting on the lap of a miner, and the other is Kirk and Harcourt Fenton Mudd in a two shot.
Wow. That's great. One of our finest hours. Ben, I have the Greatest Generation 2016 tour poster, Two Captains, wow. One Nexus.
Wow.
And anyone familiar with that tour or its poster will know that that I am wearing very little.
Yeah, you're in a Justice jumper.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it is pendulous, what's happening to me. And for some reason, I'm shooting a phaser. You, on the other hand, concerned with saving your own life.
Yeah.
Which is an instinct that I can get with. On the back, there are our tour dates, which I'm really glad to be reminded of. God, that was 2016.
Yeah.
Was it that long ago? I don't know about you, Ben, but I think a tour may, in this case, beat an off-season episode. What do you think?
Yeah, I could get behind that. All right.
3, 2, 1. Ben, I have what looks like a tour poster from the 2016 tour. It is the Greatest Generation Two Captains, One Nexus tour poster. And anyone who went to that tour would recognize you in your Wesley Crusher outfit running away from a crashing saucer, and me wearing a sock like the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yeah, I'm concerned that you just got a stack of one thing, Adam.
Let's see if that one thing beats whatever your thing is.
My thing, also from the Greatest Discovery episode, Legendarily Horny. It is when Uhura, Kirk, Bones, and Scotty materialize in the mirror universe on the transporter pad. Kirk is looking down in disbelief at his getup. Scotty and Uhura are shooting each other looks, and Bones just has basically one of the greatest glowering Bones faces you've ever seen. And the caption is, "A lot of things are getting weird."
That is a solid caption.
I think that, like so many of Bill Tilly's trading cards, the beauty is really in the selection of screenshot.
Yeah.
Bones looks unbelievable in this picture.
I might say that card over there might beat the tour poster this time.
I think I would agree.
Yeah. All right. You want to go for the third? The tiebreaker?
Let's go for the third. Let's just see what kind of crazy stuff you're going to flip over this time, Adam.
This time I'm reaching for the middle, okay?
Oh, okay.
I'm not messing with you. I'm going for the middle of the deck here.
3, 2, 1. Adam, I've got another card featuring Bones from that self-same episode. It's Bones and the lady. I forget what the deal was with these ladies, but she's kind of like slinking around in front of what looks like a medical computer in a quite a revealing garment. And the caption is, "Distracted by his own distraction." And again, just fucking perfect Bones face in this screen grab.
I do love a Bones face.
Yeah.
Ben, the card that I am holding in my hand has images of you and me.
Oh, really?
In front of a crashing and exploding Enterprise D saucer section. The text on the top says "The Greatest Generation, Two Captains, One Nexus," and that's in a nice, nice bright blue. And then at the bottom it says 2016 tour.
Yeah, no kidding.
So that is that's the tour poster for our 2016 tour. And on the back it says the pods are against them and the situation is grim. Sounds like fun.
Man,
pretty great card.
Well, what do you think? I mean, that's
You know what? Bones Face won the second round. I think Bones Face has got to win the third. And I am shocked, shocked, I tell you, that first ever tour poster loses the first ever edition of Bill Tilly Card War.
Pretty shocking. You played that game to the letter, Adam, if not the spirit.
It was like I got a deck full of jokers, and I somehow still lost.
You got the oops all berries of Bill Tilly trading card decks.
I did. I love a big stack of tour posters like this, though. This is great.
Yeah, that's fun.
I'm feeling very good about this box of cards that Bill gave us. Thanks, Bill.
Yeah, thank you, Bill. Adam, do you want to get into the episode that we came to talk about today? You suggested that you might be doing a little kind of an ad hoc drunkisode.
Oh, shit. I did, didn't I?
When we talked about the last, when we talked about the episode description last time.
You know what? I am going to go upstairs and get an adult beverage. That is a great idea. And then when I come back, we will talk about Deep Space Nine Season 4, Episode 20. It's called The Muse.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
Back.
Better than ever.
Better now.
Adam, I just popped a bottle of sparkling wine.
Wow.
I'm going to pour it into a champagne coupe.
Oh, are we doing wedding toasts?
This is a celebratory episode because it's Majel Barrett's last on-screen appearance in Star Trek.
Yeah, sure is.
So I wanted to send her off right. She's, you know, for better or for worse, Majel Barrett is a major part of Star Trek, and specifically this character, Loxana Troi.
Yep.
We've really been through a lot with her, and you know, she's a character that has gone through a huge arc that started way back in the first season of TNG.
Where is everyone?
And I think in a lot of ways goes through as much character change over the course of TNG as any character.
Makeweeds, this is the beautiful daughter I've been telling you about, Deanna.
Yeah.
And continues that tradition into today's episode.
I'm pregnant.
I think you and I have probably come full circle with her too. Like, I've felt a lot of ways about Loxana Troi over the years. Probably every possible way about her.
Yeah, I mean, she contains multitudes for sure.
Yeah,
and I mean, this is this episode is no exception to that rule. I'll say.
Interesting that that she gets the opportunity to write herself out. Majel Barrett gets a story credit on this episode.
Wow, I did not notice that.
Yeah,
that's wild. This episode starts. There's a really cool like exterior establishing shot of the station. That is very dynamic. It's like a shuttle, like kind of cutting in between some of the rings and many ships putting into dock. It really, for the first time in a long time, kind of gives the sense of DS9 as busy airport.
Yeah.
Which I really love being reminded that that's one of the functions it serves.
Yeah, I like that too. It would seem as though more episodes would begin on this kind of note, just the bustle and hustle of an airport.
Jake is up on his customary creeping spot on the second level of the promenade, and he's just kind of like characterizing people that he sees walking around. He's making notes for stories, and everybody he sees, he kind of spins a little yarn about, you know, who they might be, what they're doing.
A Bolian tries to impress a Dabo girl by wearing a toupee.
Ugly stereotypes are not a substitute for character development, Jake. Keep that in mind.
Oh, man. I submitted a screenplay in a screenwriting class in college once, and there was like a two-line character in one of the scenes that I just named Asshole.
Uh-huh.
And my screenwriting teacher really ripped into me about that because he said I collapsed the character into that one word, giving an actor no room to interpret this person.
Oh, I would say asshole contains multitudes, Ben.
Well, you have a special relationship with the concept of asshole.
Yeah.
Asshole as an institution.
I think we've known assholes of all kinds.
Yeah.
And there is a spectrum for sure.
Mm-hmm. It's an episode that really kind of swings wildly between its A and B stories. You never really know like what is motivating the cutaway from one scene to the start of the next. And in this open, Jake kind of makes weird eye contact with a lady that steps off, a loafy lady that steps off of one of these transports, and then,
hey, lady, why the long face?
It's suddenly New York.
She's got a really long face, Ben. That's my point.
Yeah, they loafed her long.
Yeah,
they gave her like a 6 or a 7 head with that forehead loaf. But Odo comes into his office, and there's Lwaxana. She's having a cry, and he does not understand why she might be crying at first. And she gets up and confesses, Odo.
I'm Preggers.
How do you know?
Odo, like, searches himself deeply and is like, did I knock her up? I mean, she was carrying me in her dress.
Is it possible that some of it dripped through? Oh my God. The implications of that are too terrible to even contemplate.
I am become pre-cum. Impregnator of older women.
I knew I was a viscous substance certain times of day, but this is ridiculous.
It is rolling timpani sound into theme song.
Golden cotton.
If Odo were the father, would the baby be able to change the shape of the bump? I bet.
No, it's a cube.
Yeah. That could be at times funny and painful.
Yeah.
The baby could probably make pregnancy a snap though, right?
Oh yeah.
It could just gush right out.
Yeah, it doesn't. No need to worry about if it's coming out head first or anything like that. It's just like any part of it is potentially its head.
This is an episode that draws your attention to some parts of it in order to obscure the others. Like Lwaxana at one point calls it a miracle.
I never thought I could have another baby.
Because a person of her age does not usually get pregnant. But that idea is brought up once and then totally left in the dust, because the point of the whole thing is not that she's pregnant and that it may be miraculous. It's that Jayal is her husband.
He's Tavnian.
And Jayal is a guy with some fairly retrograde feelings about fatherhood and the role of the parents, because he is Tavnian. And he did that shitty thing where he was a really cool guy while they were dating.
Yeah.
And he changed as soon as they got married, and now he's like, he's Orthodox Tavnian, and he's like, if you're having a boy, the baby boys need to hang out with their fathers, and
see,
only their
fathers.
See,
I didn't get the sense that they really dated that much, to be honest. Like, I kind of got the feeling that this is one of those classic Lwaxana Troy putting the marriage cart before the relationship horse situations.
She says nice things about him, though, like in those times before marriage. I don't know. I just sort of got...
Like she says that he said like some great stuff about her at their wedding.
That's
the precedent that she cites. And like we come to understand that to be like a serious element of Tavnian wedding customs later, but I didn't get the feeling that they knew each other that well when they first got married.
Huh. Yeah, I could get with that. Maybe my mind was just filling in those blanks.
Maybe. I mean, it would be ridiculous to marry somebody that you don't know that well in this context.
Right. There are a lot of fish in the Star Trek sea. Lwaxana's there because she wants protection from Odo from her husband, because she does not believe in the whole give up her baby boy to the male father and then never seeing this kid again.
Right.
She wants to keep the baby, and she wants Odo's help to do that.
She does not want her child to not even know that women exist until he's 16.
Yeah.
What would that do to a young boy?
You would think that I didn't know women existed until I was 16.
And then,
I was real dumb.
And then the existence of women was the only thing that you could think about for the next
infinity years.
Yeah.
We cut back and forth between this Luxana story and the Jake story in an episode that I don't feel like is super confident in which is the A and the B story here.
Yeah. I mean, one of them certainly ends before the other.
Yeah.
But it certainly presented as just kind of a tandem B-plus story.
I always want to believe that the life-threatening story is the A story, but that's not always the case on this show.
No. It's one of these strange episodes where the show has really, like, flexed its muscle in terms of, like, big story arcs at this point. And this one kind of comes along and feels like it is somewhat happening in a vacuum.
Yeah.
It's a bottle episode, you know?
Yeah, it really is.
We go to our Replimat meet cute, where Jake is noodling away on his iPad, and this woman comes in and sits down, kind of does the thing where she gets him to notice her, and she notices him. And this is Onaya. Onaya is played by an actress named Meg Foster, who you may remember from The Masters of the Universe. She played Evil Lynn, Adam.
After all this time, Grayskull is ours.
Yeah, who could forget Evil Lynn
from
Masters of the Universe?
She's a busy actress. She's got credits up to 2019. She's stayed working since the 80s.
She's great in this episode. This is someone that the production notes indicated that this was their first pick. Like, they always wanted to work with her, and they got her.
She looked so familiar to me, and I was, like, trying to see if she did a TNG episode or not, but I don't think she did.
Yeah.
She's just been, like, her 80s and 90s credits are, like, almost entirely genre television.
Right.
So I watched a lot of that crap.
Thank you, my darling.
Star Trek's imperfect future makes it so that Jake is not immediately suspicious of someone who has kind advice and experience to share. Like, this is like the moment that a little bit took me out of the episode, because I was like, who are you and why are you talking to Jake?
Yeah, the conversation is kind of about, like, she starts talking to him about architecture, and apparently the architect behind several famous Cardassian buildings is somebody that she knew in the past.
Tavor Kell, the architect?
And she makes the case that she's bagged a lot of artistic types, and that Jake might be next on her, you know, the next notch on her bedpost.
Do you get the sense that Jake ever wants to fuck her? It's weird that, like, her presentation of this offer feels very sexy. And it is almost immediately an aspect that is not on the table. And it's not even an inclination for Jake. Like, when Jake goes to her apartment later, she says, no, this isn't about that. This is about you writing. But it's never even on his mind.
I interpreted the way he behaved in the meet cute scene as being almost embarrassed at how strong she's coming on.
Yeah.
Like, tempted by the potential offer of sex, but also kind of too young and unsure of himself to play the game at the level that she's playing it.
Right.
I don't know, but I think you could also make a case for him just being embarrassed and weirded out that she's being so sexy.
Right. She becomes the focal point for Jake for the rest of the episode, much so that he ditches plans with his father to go to the Bajoran outback.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of at prime skipping family vacation age.
He sure is, yeah.
I definitely skipped a family vacation to France when I was about this age, which I look back on with regret.
Boy, that never would have been possible for me. Like, skipping was not an option.
Wow. Yeah, I stayed home, and, like, I think I went hiking one day, but just played, like, Nintendo 64 the rest of the time.
Cool.
not a great look. I could have enriched myself and had an experience in another country.
Jake's rationale seems totally reasonable, though. He's like, I don't want to be the third wheel for you and Cassidy Yates. Like,
I don't want to hear you guys one tent over getting it on.
Yeah.
So go on your camping trip by yourself, Dad.
Do you think when you're in the Bajoran outback, you've got to keep your food and garbage in a Bajoran bear case? Like what sort of wild animals are out there, I wonder?
I don't know. We found out through Discovery that Vulcan has some pretty insane beasts running around in its forest. So if Bajor is anything like that, I would say that you need to hang your food in a very tall tree.
Can we get a tiny sea story where we just cut back to the Bajoran outback and it's like Ben Sisko shooting a Bajoran bear with a phaser? Give me a little bit of that.
It'd be like that, the scenes in that terrible Michael Crichton movie Congo, where
right.
they set up turreted phasers around their camp.
Captain Sisko comes back to the station just like covered in bear pelts. The biggest one is for you, Worf.
I have much to teach you about women.
To be quite honest about it, I was in a pair.
A fucking pair.
Mr. Bucket, I have to revert back to my living state. I don't use the bucket anymore.
Speaking of Worf, we go to Quark's bar where Worf, Kira, and Dax are sitting around a bar table with Lwaxana, who... As a pregnant lady, maybe doesn't want to spend too much time in a bar, you know? I didn't catch what she was drinking, but not necessarily the greatest combination. And
I don't think pregnancy needs to hold anyone back from having a good time, Ben.
To me, bars are kind of unpleasant, except for there is some alcohol to be had there.
Oh, jeez.
I don't know. I'm projecting myself onto her. I shouldn't do that.
This does not seem to look like a fun hang, as hangs go.
She is bumming everybody out to the extent that Quark actually levels a legal complaint. She's bringing down the mood in there.
Yeah, Quark asks Odo to either cheer them up, which is a hilarious request of Odo, or to have Odo walk Lwaxana home. And that is the... I mean, given the two choices, I think you know which one Odo is going to choose.
Okay, I'll do my tight five. I've been getting this ready for Conan, but I suppose I can do it here.
Has anyone in the crowd accidentally almost flushed themselves down the toilet? I mean, really, how are they making these things?
Do you ever blow your nose and blow your whole face into the Kleenex? Has this ever happened to anybody? Anybody?
So I was a seagull, and I was flying around San Francisco, and... this asshole driving a shuttlecraft cut me off, and like the only thing I wanted to do was shit on his windshield, and because I'm a changeling, I just couldn't do it. Just the worst.
One nice thing about being me is I fail every blood test, so when they come around doing the mandatory drug tests at work, I just say, not my problem.
Take my giant lake of relatives, please.
Lwaxana does not want to go home when Odo walks them back to their quarters. They are across the hall from each other.
Yeah, she conveniently got placed in a set of quarters right across from him.
You and I famously request rooms far away from each other when we're out on tour.
Yeah, well, I always get the room with, you know, because I have all the status points on the fancy floor, and then you get the bad room.
That's right. I get the one that's been smoked in.
You get the murder room.
Lwaxana is admiring Odo's gym equipment, and it is here that we realize, maybe for the first time, Odo doesn't have any furniture, and this is a technology I feel like Worf should have tried before moving on to the little D. Like, if he doesn't want visitors, don't have furniture. Or, like, bring back the balls chair. You didn't see a guest ever sit in the balls chair, Worf.
Yeah, nobody comes over to your house and is picks that as where they're going to sit.
Right. Yeah, so I think Worf left too early.
Yeah. And I feel like Cardassian room is his kind of uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I wondered a little bit, like we've watched Odo do some changeling stuff in a way that makes it seem semi-pleasurable.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered if everything in his apartment is kind of a sex toy.
Yeah, it kind of looks like everything is a version of the Accommodator.
Dr. Ruth would just give him a double thumbs up on his home decor.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, tonally, this scene is really interesting because it starts with this sort of hospitality confusion and then pivots directly into a pretty deep conversation that they have where Loxana is like, are you over Kira? Because I'm still not over you. And it's here that we learn that Kira and Shakaar are still together.
I thought it was also interesting she talked about her deceased baby from that episode about Troy having a little sister once. And it, I mean, this is a great scene. It really gets to the emotional depth of this character. And it's kind of an interesting choice. She's kind of drifting off while talking about it.
Life is a search to find the peace you once had when you were safe inside your mother.
But I think also getting deep down into some emotional truth while doing that.
I didn't have a mother.
This, I think, if we were to note the moment that we finally came around on Loxana Troy, I think it was when she started to demonstrate this kind of pathos.
Yeah, like having a rich internal life that is unsatisfied with her position in the world.
It took several episodes for her to get there. Like, she did a ton of, like, ham and cheese story, but, like, those days are long ago, and I think this is a version of her that's very interesting. That continues to be interesting.
And we've talked about Odo as a wet blanket several times, but in this scene, he turns into a regular blanket. What a friend.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of a horrifying monstrosity, though. like I love...
A blanket pillow man chimera.
I love the intention, but, like, this is horrifying, isn't it? Like, if she were to wake up, she would look down at what's covering her and then look at what's above her. That would not be restful sleep.
Could you get drenched in Odo?
Is Odo warm?
Ooh.
Because I guess the reason I ask is, like, if that is a cool blanket, I could get with that. But if that is a human being temperature blanket, that would be awful.
Yeah, yeah. No heated blankets, thank you very much.
Yeah, don't need any of that.
Well, speaking of things that are draped, Adam, Jake shows up at Onaya's quarters, where she has done, like, full 80s sex curtains. Everywhere you look, there are candles and curtains.
I brought some of my stories for you to read.
I don't need to.
Oh.
She is in total There Is No Dana, Only Zool regalia. She's, like, that kind of Sigourney Weavering.
Yeah, and she gets Jake to sit down in front of her, and she's kind of talking him through some writing process stuff. He brought some finished stories for her to look over, and she has zero interest in that.
Onaya's like, have you heard of Julia Cameron? I'm gonna sit you down, and we're gonna get you just writing your morning pages.
I don't know who Julia Cameron is.
She's the author of The Artist's Way, and there was a lot about Onaya in this episode that made me think of that as a thing.
Yeah, I mean, she's definitely a character that I feel like you see a lot of in all things, because writers are fascinated with the idea of, like, how to write more, better, faster, and not be stuck with your own thoughts.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, just one example, I feel like, even in Star Trek, of that idea.
Right.
The fantasy of breaking through writer's block. She gives him a fancy fountain pen and some real paper, which is a total novelty to Jake. But in spite of its novelty, Jake winds up having, like, super incredible penmanship.
Yeah, that was great.
Like, how are you going to be that, have that beautiful of lettering if you almost exclusively work in a word processor on an iPad.
It would be great if they tilted down off of Jake's face to the paper and it's just like the worst chicken scratch. Like, he's holding the pen in his fist.
What's this, a crayon? Yes, it was used by another famous author, and now it is yours.
I'm going to put this out in the world. I want to see a recut of this scene where they cut from his face down to the paper, and it's like the worst.
It was a dark and stormy night.
Yeah.
Looking like a doctor is writing it. She starts...
It's just a picture of dick butt.
but like badly drawn.
Yeah, yeah.
She starts kind of rubbing his writing chakra on the back of his head.
You stimulate a neural pressure point like this.
And this is all because she kind of ascribes to a certain theory of creativity, which is write horny, edit sober.
That chapter was not in the artist's way. But I can get with it.
You feel where my thumbs are?
This looks like it feels very good.
Yeah.
But Jake is doing that thing where he's like dispassionately accepting a blowjob and not really paying attention. Like all sorts of stuff is happening to his body. And yeah. He is focused on the page.
He is focused. We cut back to Odo's quarters where Loaxana is playing a fun game called Find the Changeling.
Mm-hmm. No one ever looks in the toilet.
There you are.
This looks like so much fun.
I
legit want to play this game.
I mean, it seems impossible, right? Like he perfectly blends in. She is convinced that she's found him too.
The question of warmth is maybe even more apt here. Like, if you were to run your hand over the sculpture in the room, could you feel a temperature change where Odo was?
Doesn't he change on, like, a molecular level, though?
Yeah.
Like, when they scan that whole episode where Change Leader was impersonating Kira stuck in a rock.
Yeah.
And he thought he was, like, when he tricordered that rock, he was... scanning rock.
Yeah, it's imperceptible. And I guess Loaxana must not be able to get a read off of him emotionally in any state, right?
Yeah, yeah. He's an unreadable to her.
Yeah. Yeah. So she is going to suck at this game, but she's still looking like she's having a fun time playing. So, and so is Odo.
Yeah. He gets called away because her husband has arrived on the station and... we get to meet this guy. His name is Jayal.
Yeah.
And he is none too pleased at the situation with Odo covering for his wife. And Odo makes a fairly startling announcement in this scene, which is that Jayal is not going to have any legal claim to his child under the Tavanian system of justice pretty soon because... the baby belongs to the wife's husband, and if Odo marries Loaxana, Jayal is out of the picture.
We're getting married?
I kind of wish Jayal is indignant about the situation. He's indignant about having to come and find his wife.
Yeah.
But he is not feeling a particular way about facing this description of Tavnian law and how Odo wants to use it to take his child away. Like, I was bewildered by this. As if Tavnians sort of put up with the idea of wives being taken away by other potential suitors. Like, that this must happen all the time.
Well, them's the rules.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
not a satisfying character motivation.
Yeah. Yeah, and so the preparation begins for this Tavnian traditional wedding. And it's a ceremony that hinges on the groom being able to convince everyone at the ceremony, and in this case, even Jayal, of Odo's sincere love for Loaxana Troy. Like, it's sort of a prove it or lose it situation.
Right. And it's kind of that's presented as like a major catch that, you know, I mean, I think that to some extent, the scene where she explains this to Odo is as much about Odo's love for Kira mm-hmm. as anything else.
It's not as if I was planning to marry someone else.
But that's kind of subtext in it.
Right.
Because she says, like, you're going to actually have to convince them that you love me for real, and mm-hmm. even my husband is going to have to believe that.
Yeah, it'll be a test for someone for whom feelings don't come easy.
If you start crying, just try to push the tears onto your forehead so it'll look like sweat.
We briefly cut back to a scene where Jake is writing, and it's like close up on his beautiful penmanship as drops of blood are falling out of his nose onto the page.
Yeah.
And that they kind of brush past that. Like, she gives him some Kleenex, and he's briefly like, oh man, one of my favorite comedians just did an amazing joke about this, actually. You ever blow your nose and blow off your whole face? It's funnier when he says it.
You know what I love about Odo is he just tells it like it is.
He's saying what we're all thinking.
Yeah. Yeah, and it at this point feels like if you weren't hip to it before, you're sort of coming around to the idea that this is a seduce and destroy situation on Onaya's part.
Yeah. Yeah, she's a succubus.
The next scene is the wedding, and I was shocked, Ben, that no one in attendance bothered to wear their dress uniform. Does that say that they found out too late, or that that's how much they care about Odo and this shotgun wedding that they're having?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Odo and Loaxana seem to be the only ones that dressed up at all.
Yeah, and I mean, blue corduroy, not the most formal of textiles, right?
No, certainly not. I mean, maybe it used to be.
Yeah.
Back when it was the cloth of the king or whatever.
That's great.
But is Odo wearing something, or did he changeling this outfit?
Oh, yeah. Like, I don't think Odo is ever wearing clothes. I think he is in a constant state of full nudity Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah. Weird to think about.
Odo gives it a crack. Like, he makes the case, but in a very, like, diplomatic way. Like, the case for his marriage to Loaxana. J.L. doesn't buy it.
It is, like, a very perfunctory, business-like statement. And, yeah, J.L. is having none of it. And then we get an opportunity for Odo to be really vulnerable about the way he relates to Loaxana.
The day I met her is the day I stopped being alone.
I think digs deep and as much convinces himself as everyone else in the room that he is actually sincerely in love with her.
Taking off the table their gender, I kind of think that Tavnian traditional weddings are a great idea. Like, how many weddings have you been to with friends where you're like, boy, I sure hope they make it. I don't see it personally, but like, go get them, kids. But I love the idea. I think it's sort of like what writing your own vows does, that very right. few people do. But the idea of facing your friends and family and saying why you want to do this big thing and making that from the heart, I could
totally make the case for it.
I love this idea. I wish it were done more often. I think it's cool.
The stakes are really high, right?
Yeah.
Because it's the speak now or forever hold your peace taken to the nth degree.
Right. Yeah. And if you are unable to make that case in front of your friends and family, like, what then?
Yeah.
It's exciting.
Jenna is like really great looking. She's 2 months pregnant.
She can drink me under the table.
Even now.
Yeah, the wedding invitations just say possible wedding. Yeah. RSVP.
Yeah. But the scene builds to a really nice emotional crescendo, and everyone is convinced. And JL, like, walks out not complaining. Like, he relinquishes his marriage with Loaxana and therefore his son. And then, like, all the Starfleets are standing around with Quark, and he announces that they're going to go have a party at Quark's bar because he's a hopeless romantic.
Yeah. I don't buy that for a second.
And when everybody is out of the room, walks out and says, like, oh, thank goodness that you really sold that. That was great. Glad we were able to pull the old wool over everyone's eyes. And yeah. Odo's like, that wasn't wool. That was me.
Everyone always makes that mistake. It was me the whole time.
It's another kind of romantic and relational rug pulled out from this poor guy.
Yeah.
Because I think he was really being serious.
Loxana makes two mistakes in this scene. She does not know Odo's true feelings when she shoots her mouth off like that. And she wants to tell the gang after the party that it's not a real wedding. And that's not cool. You're accepting, like, that's stolen wedding valor to go to the bar and accept all the free drinks and like, all that merriment.
Yeah.
That's crummy.
We had an apartment in Brooklyn. It was my then fiance and I and another couple, and it was a bit of a party house. Like on the weekends, often friends would kind of convene there because we had a good amount of space and a yard, so it was kind of a nice place to spend time with a bunch of people. And at one point while we were living there, a couple that were, I guess, friends with my... Maybe they were friends of my roommates, but they came over and they're like, yeah, we just got married so that he can stay in the country. Like they were like telling us about their green card marriage.
Oh, that's fun.
And they'd like literally just come from the courthouse, but then they invited like everybody they knew to have their wedding reception just at our apartment. Huh. And at a certain point, it was like 3 a.m. and it was like bumping in our apartment. I was like, we did not agree to this.
Wow. Yeah, like, that's not good.
Don't have your reception at somebody's house you don't know.
No.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, that's a bad look. I am often surprised at how, like, I've got enough self-awareness for everyone. I have too much, mm-hmm. is what I'm trying to say.
And yeah, I'm, an overabundance. I have that same affliction.
I'm shocked when I encounter a person with next to zero.
Yeah, it's for us to have a surplus, there have to be people with barely any, right?
That's capitalism, baby.
Morn, dear sweet morn.
You here, buddy?
Morn,
stop. Hammer time.
While everything seems to be great for Loxana and Odo, things in the Onaya and Jake arena are not. Because they're having an argument about his work output. Yeah, she wants him to rest, and he wants to keep going.
I think that the implication of this scene is that he has been writing flat out for days. Because Ben went off on his 3-day trip, and they're saying like, oh yeah, he'll be back soon, and I can rest then. And she's like, no, you need to rest now, because you're not gonna be doing that well if you keep pushing. And Jake is really writing for, I need to see this thing through. I could be done in a couple of days with a real novel.
We pan over to the answering machine in Jake and Ben's quarters with the red light flashing, and it's like the tape from Grizzly Man being played. Jake, you gotta help me. The Bajoran bears are everywhere.
I listened to the tape and I told Jake he must never listen to it.
But anyways, she does convince Jake that it's time to take five and maybe go have a cup of juice and a nap. And he kind of gets on the elevator and takes it down to the Replimat and gets himself some OJ. And he's really stumbling around. And when he sits down to have his juice, he passes out on the floor of the Replimat. And it's a smash cut to infirmary where... Captain Sisko, still in his civilian clothing, is standing over him with Bashir. And Bashir is basically saying, like, this was a super close call. His brain almost collapsed from some external stimulus, the source of which I know not what.
Yeah. Get a load of synaptic collapse. That doesn't sound good.
No. It does not.
The synapses do not fire well, Enterprise.
So they're going to let Jake get some bed rest for a while, and one of the Bajoran nurses is doing some science over him when Onaya kind of appears in the corner of the room. And she's got kind of like a sparkly glitter ghost effect that we've seen coming out of her hands a couple of times. And in this moment, just because of the way the shot was framed, it kind of made it look like there was just a sparkly glitter ghost appearing directly over Jake's face.
Right.
But in fact, she's like deep in the corner of the room.
Yeah.
Not great.
This is going to be the first of a couple Onaya effects that I wish had been better. I understand why they're not, but a little bit of a liability in this episode.
She kind of boxes the Bajoran nurse out of the way and then tries to convince Jake to abscond with her to go finish the novel.
Come with me, Jake.
After the commercial break, it's Cisco, Bashir, and O'Brien talking about this search for Jake. And what I wasn't clear on in this moment was why they were searching for Onaya and traces of her psionic power instead of searching for Jake. Like, did they ever mention why that wasn't a possibility? Why wouldn't the censors pick Jake up?
I don't know. Maybe he took off his comm badge or something?
Yeah.
I don't know.
This stuck in my mind craw.
Mm. Yeah, there could have been half a sentence of dialogue to clear that up. But
yeah,
they do find psionic energy in the bulkhead, and they know that what happened to Jake was psionic. So they're going to look for whatever, and I guess the nurse also saw this lady, so they're going to they got to do a hard target psionic search. Psionic roadblocks at a 20-mile radius.
Uh-huh.
Going to search every psionic fox house, psionic hen house, and psionic outhouse until we find our man.
All the vole houses on DS9.
Yeah. And we catch up with Jake in a Jeffries tube. And Onaya is like literally scooping glitter out of his brain and smearing it all over her décolletage in this scene.
Yeah.
She is really getting off on this creativity binge that he's having.
She doesn't want the blood coming out of his nose because that would be gross.
Yeah. Yeah. She keeps helping him with the blood, but Cisco finds them. He, to his credit, like tries to phaser her.
I love this.
Yeah.
He is not interested in studying new life. In the aliens' parlance, he does not want to take back, does not want to study. He chooses to destroy, which is great. The only problem is he can't destroy Onaya because, I guess with the help of Jake's life energy, but maybe it doesn't matter, phasers are useless against her.
Yeah, she kind of villain monologues what she is and what she did for him before she disappears. She says she's a being of pure energy that goes and finds brilliant minds. She lists Keats among some alien names, and I guess the case that she's making is that she's sort of an internal that causes a creative mind to accelerate, which gives off some kind of energy that she feeds on and uses that person up, but also gives them the gift of being a name that rings out in history.
Nothing Ben Sisko hates more than a name dropper. I think that's why he shoots her.
Yeah, he says, "You dropped something."
Onaya pieces out, like goes through the bulkhead, leaves the station, and then goes to warp.
Yeah, she must be cousins with the creepy little girl that visited the entrepreneur that one time.
Is she on her way to Delta Runner 4? She seems like a very powerful lady.
Listen, I've lived a lot of life, and I think what I'm kind of realizing is I need a woman that is not going to disappear at the arrival of some boosnack. Somebody who can really stick it out with me for the long haul.
I've been with Rishan for thousands of years, and we're just now beginning to open up the marriage. I like my chances. We'll have to see if Onaya is game.
You know, a lot of people don't realize that, well, in a same-sex couple, Rashaan is technically bisexual, and she does not want to look at me as the person that limits her ability to explore the other side of her sexuality. So this could actually be great for both of us. I am not trying to force that to happen. I'm just hoping that, you know, this being available to both of us is good for everyone.
When you're as old as I am, you get to be pretty open-minded.
I bet you didn't think you could get to an age where you thought gold glitter was sexy just on its own, but that's how old I am.
There was a time when I would come home from the club covered in gold glitter and I'd have to wash that off pretty fast. Very embarrassing, but not anymore.
Anyways, we've been listening to a lot of Dan Savage, and he's given us some ideas about new ways to live our life, and for that I am very thankful.
You really want to do this? Here, now, okay, let's do it!
The button on the episode is Loxana, after going through a successful Tavnian traditional wedding, has totally flipped the script on Odo. This comes as a surprise to him. She wants to take a transport back to Beta Zed to give birth, because she's still in love with him, but she also knows that it's not fair to stick around and love him because of the resentments that are a part of unrequited love.
I've imposed on you enough.
Pretty mature way of doing it. Like, I tip my hat to Loxana Troy here. Like, she's been around the block. She doesn't want to go through any bullshit with Odo.
Yeah. And also, I mean, I think... true to his character, he is back in his box. You know, he's
right.
he cannot bring himself to just say the thing that would make her understand that he wasn't acting.
He's in a relationship bucket, if you will.
Yeah,
you know, a lot of people get into stand up because they really want a sitcom. You know, that's looked down on in the comedy community. But I really just want a sitcom. Is that such a bad thing?
I'm less of a stand-up and more of a storyteller. An alt-comic, if you will.
Yeah, some of my material I do with a PowerPoint presentation. Sometimes I draw something on an easel.
Finally, Jake looks like he's recovered, and his father has just finished reading the manuscript that he wrote with Onaya. This has not often gone well. Other times Ben has read Jake's work, it has... it has inspired some fairly faint praise.
Yeah, some, wow, this shows some potential.
Yeah, in this case, he really digs it. It's unfinished, but they begin to debate inspiration's relationship with creative work and,
yeah,
and like when and how much responsibility a creator connotes to inspiration versus like taking responsibility for their own created work. I thought this part of the episode was pretty interesting. Like,
yeah,
the reluctance Jake has in feeling like it's his.
Inspiration is 99% perspiration, and in my case, it's at least twice that.
He does not feel like it's his, and that is, I think, a very familiar thing for creatives, that sometimes you create something that you didn't even really feel that much agency in creating. You know, you just did it and then it was there and done, and you know, it feels like it came from somewhere else.
Right.
And the case Ben Sisko is making is like, these words were in you. She helped you get them out, and there's no, you shouldn't feel guilty about that. Like, this is really you. These are your characters and your words, even though you suck at spelling.
Yeah. Jake learned how to write cursive, but he did not learn how to spell.
I know. I love that he's working without spell check. I'd probably suck at spelling too.
Yeah.
The final shot before we go to an establishing of the station is Jake titling the book, and it's Anselm, which is the title of one of the books in that is referenced in The Visitor.
That's right. So maybe it will happen? Like that?
Yeah, he's going to finish that thing.
Maybe Ben Sisko will have another accident.
Did you like the episode, Adam?
This feels like an episode for people who liked Imaginary Friend and The Visitor. And I am not one of those people.
Yeah, it's kind of just imaginary friend meets the visitor, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, there are elements to like here. I like the Luxana Troy stuff. I like Odo. You know, Odo does that thing where he demonstrates some growth and then he withdraws again. And that is sort of a thing with him. Like he has the potential, but he just doesn't quite get there. Like he gets in his own way. And that is interesting to see. And I like stories that tell that give Odo that kind of dimensionality. But like it makes me sad that we're not going to see Luxana Troy anymore. I guess it's a good episode for her to go out on.
I mean, her stuff is good for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say that's probably the best part of the ep. The whole lady getting a hard on just watching Jake write was pretty cheesy. Like that's not a thing.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah. But like if we're like going to argue what science fiction is, like that's pretty science fiction to me.
Yeah, that's just pure writer fantasy. What if a girl liked me for doing this?
Both that and like Jake Sisko wanting to live a creative life. That seems like in modern times a fantasy too, unfortunately. But I think it's neat that Jake can be a role model for people who want to live such a life. So in that way, I'm glad stories like this exist. I just don't think this is a great execution of those themes. What about you?
I am right there with you. I felt like it's an episode with a lot of creditable ideas in it and some good performances, but it's very uneven and doesn't really hold together as a cogent thing that I like that much.
Yeah.
But you know what I do like, Adam?
Yeah, do you like Priority One Messages that much, Ben?
Fucking love them.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental. Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, we have a couple of Priority One messages here. The first one is from Jim, and it's to Ben and Adam. Goes like this. Just listened to your Nth Degree episode. Wow. Was that the actual episode about Nth Degree, or the one where we rolled Nth Degree on the game of buttholes? Who knows? Anyways, just listened to your Nth Degree episode and noticed Ben's use of the word factoid, an often misused word that should describe a commonly held but false speculation. I was then delighted when your use of the word proved correct and the, quote, extensive research you both had done amounted to repeated bad puns and doing bits about made up behind the scene. And then it's just the word scene and there's no period.
Oh, cool. Well, good message there, Jim.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. Maybe Jim passed out before finishing his Priority One message?
It feels like we're in the dunk tank, and Jim paid to throw some baseballs at the target. So, good job, Jim.
An episode that I don't think we ever could have imagined was going to be as controversial as it was.
Right.
We still get shitty tweets about that.
Yeah. Cool. Ben, our second Priority One message is from Jim. I got cut off. And the message is for Ben and Adam. Message goes like this in the middle of a sentence. Made up behind the scenes trivia. You always make me laugh, whether it's a special episode or a regular old episode. Thanks for the great work you do. So Jim totally redeemed himself.
Wow.
In the second message.
Directed by M. Night Shyamalan. Twist ending.
Wow. Great job, Jim.
Amazing. If you would like to send us a message with twists and turns, you know what to do. You head to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal message and $200 for a commercial message. And these really help us cover the cost of production. Thank you.
Gotta get that gold press latch. Get that
gold press latch.
Am I right?
Moms can't live with them, can't find a great gift for them. It's madness, and it's the same every year. Mother's Day comes around, and it's like, what's it going to be this year? Another robe? Another candle? Slippers? A sweater? Flowers? We've got to do better than that, right? Well, you can, And it's actually the best gift you could possibly give a loved one, an Aura frame. Now, we have a policy to only do ads on our show for things that we actually like and use. And I gotta tell you, the Aura frame is probably the best gift I've ever given. The folks I've given an Aura frame to love it. And I love it too, because when you give an Aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of old pictures, you're giving them new pictures. Every time you send one, do it. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and the code is SCARVES at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply. When I was growing up, I didn't have anyone to tell me about personal grooming. I had to learn these things on my own. So I'm here to save you some embarrassment and recommend the grooming tools that I use, the products from Manscaped. Now, this is a company that constantly has its mind on your bush. Imagine the meetings they have. Imagine the pictures they have in their PowerPoint presentations. Now imagine your junk looking its best thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0. This thing is the latest bunch trimming technology with two interchangeable heads, a standard one for taking just a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda!
Yeah, I'm going to give the Shimoda to Worf, who went through makeup for a scene in which and correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's two words that he says, and he sits totally still in that scene in Quark's bar as Loxana is telling them her depressing story. He's just staring off into the middle distance, and then Odo mentions something about walking, and Worf says, "I'll go," but the offer wasn't for him. And the choice that Michael Dorn is making here, like, I'm choosing to project a man's disappointment and frustration at having to go through makeup to do his one scene and deliver his two words of dialogue. Like, there's a lot going on here. I'm choosing to believe that. But for Worf to just, like, I don't know if a Klingon has ever been in this much existential pain before. The look on his face is awful.
Yeah.
And I love it. I love every choice about it. And for that reason, Worf's my drunk Shimoda. What about you?
Mine is the husband, the original husband, JL.
Yeah.
This guy storms into Odo's office in a huff. You know, like, "I hope you have a good reason for detaining me, sir." And he has heard tell of Odo, presumably from Loxana. And then in making the case for why he is here to get Loxana, he utters her name. And he fucking mispronounces it.
Yeah. The way we used to. I think there's
you don't know your own wife's name?
We've said Luxwana before. I think that's that's an easy mistake to make.
It's an easy mistake to make, but you're sitting across from an actor who's had a zillion scenes with this character on a set with writers and directors and producers that, you know all about, you know, like I don't blame this actor for having a bad take, but go back over it again and get a good take.
Right.
You know, don't leave that in the show.
You don't have to do it.
Yeah. So JL is my drunk Shimoda for not knowing his wife's name that clearly.
Yeah. I mean, how does this happen? A lot of people on set are thinking about something else.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I think it's how episodes like this happen. It's like, we got to fucking get an episode done.
Yeah. It's one of 26. What the fuck is the difference? Ben, what's coming up on the next episode of Deep Space Nine?
Another one of 26, Adam. It's season 4, episode 21, For the Cause. Sisko is shocked to learn that his girlfriend, Cassidy Yates, may be a Maquis smuggler.
Whoa. All right.
Shit, dog.
How are we going to watch it?
That is a good question.
Only Game of Buttholes, Will of the Prophets can tell us.
That's true.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
So at present, we're on square 14. I'm going to roll these bones and see what we're going to do. Fuck.
Olamarine!
Drink is the antidote.
I rolled a 4, Adam. That means our next episode is a Quark's Bar.
Great.
It's been a long time since we've done a Quark's Bar episode.
Yeah.
Some would say too long. Some would say not long enough.
Right. I think I'll have a better grasp on how I feel by the end of that recording session.
Fun. Well, that will be next time. And in the meantime, you can head to MaximumFun.org/donate to support the show. You can head to Twitter.com and use the hashtag GreatestGen to find tweets that people drop about the show. I'm on there at BenjaminAHR. Adam is on there at Cut for Time. Also, that's a great place to check out the trading cards that Bill Tilly makes for every episode of the show. And also the posters that J.J. Lindell makes for every episode of the show. Both weekly delights that use the Greatest Gen hashtag.
Weekly delights. That's what they are. Music's by the great Adam Ragusea, chopping and screwing the music of the other great Dark Materia. And with that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, which may not be the episode that you went to bed with.
Daughter of the fifth house, holder of the sacred chalice of Reeks, heir of the holy rings of Beta Zed. And unless you want to create an interstellar incident, you had better beam back to your ship.
No, don't say it. Think it. Use your mind, not your mouth.
Your husband quite likes the idea of seeing me unclothed.
Competition seems to bring out the best in the human male.
Don't bother to deny it. Your minds are so unsophisticated, I can read your thoughts in my sleep.
You can't just stroll onto the bridge whenever you feel like it.
I didn't just stroll on, dear. I took that turbo tube or whatever you call it. How much happiness is there in always being there for someone else and never being there for yourself? You see, that sap running through the veins helps keep it warm. I have a new love, Jean-Luc. And you can't keep killing all my lovers. Now that simply has to stop. Jean-Luc! You delicious man! You were just thinking of me, weren't you? Oh, I adore diplomacy. Everyone dresses so well. I am a woman dressing for a man. Something you might try now and then, dear.
You are a kind woman.
No,
No, I'm a hateful woman. I hate what you're going to do, and I hate you for doing it. It is the custom for your loved ones to join you with this resolution, is it not?
Deanna, I love you, but you do make everything sound like an epitaph.
If we're to be real friends, we've got to share only the truth.
Would you care to come laugh with us?
Actually, we were about to experience a mud bath.
He would not approve of a traditional Betazoid wedding, so I am happily adapting. Now, it's as simple as that.
Every pore in my body tingles with contentment. I wanted to teach you how to grab the joys of living. And you turned around and taught me to not let go of them.
Vagaries?
It looks ordinary. I've never cared to be ordinary.
So you see, Odo, even we non-shapeshifters have to change who we are once in a while.
You are so precious to me.
Permission to disembark, Captain.
Thank you for the drinks.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.